11. Fear made flesh. Dark, feral figures swarm Logis Gateway and Clanium Square. Fafnir Rand's elements have been driven out into the quadrangles and scholar courts beside the library, and there is no room to recompose. The entire length of the Hall of Governance is ablaze, wrecked by the demon fight they have just endured, and the assault position Rand hoped to establish and hold is lost. As the Sons of Horus, and he knew it would be them, begin to pour through the gateway from the Maxis processional, his formations are not locked in and waiting to greet them. They are in disarray. Plans die as fast as men, and the pavements around the burning hall are littered with bodies in yellow plate. Beliefs die too, long-cherished, long-trusted beliefs in method and technique. Some things don't die. Rand doesn't know what it was they found in the Hall of Governance, other than it was nigh on impossible to kill. He buried his axe blades in its bolt-shot mass, but he still isn't sure if it is actually dead. He isn't certain if it was alive to begin with. Rand thinks it was probably waiting for them, that it found them, which means that all the normal principles of combat are null and void. Everything he has learned, every battlefield tactic the Praetorians schooled into him, is meaningless. This notion distresses him more than any aspect of the physical danger surrounding him. The art of war, as practiced by the Imperial Fists, is no longer trustworthy. He feels a sort of numbing loss. The rubrics of the world have come undone. This was supposed to be a bounding counterattack, hasty, yes, and born out of dire necessity, but calculated and precise. He had identified the threat, the numbers of the foe, the direction of movement, and he had formulated a robust response to meet, block, and decapitate the enemy advance. Textbook methodology. Except suddenly, the enemy was behind them. It was where it couldn't and shouldn't be. It was already among them. What good is rational methodology when the foe can just appear? When it can come out of nowhere? When it can come out of mirrors? He and his surviving men are pinned. There is nowhere to fall back to. Rand would only consider that option if it allowed them a chance to reinforce a line. But lines are meaningless. Plans are meaningless. The direction of enemy advance is meaningless. The thing in the hall, that shrieking thing that claimed the lives of so many of his men and left raking fingernail punctures in Rand's armour, was the greatest nightmare of the Imperial Fists made manifest. Rand tries to shake the thought off, but it won't leave him alone. The supreme fear of the Imperial Fists, if they could admit to a fear at all, is to be outplayed by unpredictable variables. Not to know. The warcraft of the Seventh has always depended on knowing. Knowing the location, the angles of advance, terrain variables. Such specifics become their weapons, even in a fight this precarious and desperate. Not anymore. And it is as though the thing in the Hall of Governance knew that. It hadn't come to simply tear their bodies. It had come to shred their minds. It was a psychological coup, severing their faith in method as fast as it severed limbs. It was as if their darkest phobia had come to life. Worse, it was as though their most secret and deepest doubts had created it. Rand tries to gather himself, but there is nothing to cling to. Plans are pointless, and the rules are vanished. The enemy, now in part or totally imbued by some never-born magic, can be anywhere and everywhere. Intel and preparation are worthless. The trusted mindset of the Imperial Fists cannot be trusted. Rand thinks that this is what human fear must taste like. He is conditioned to process fear, so it doesn't affect him, but that conditioning seems to have failed or malfunctioned. Rand is heedless of the bolt shells shrieking past him, the explosions that crater the courts, heedless even of the figures in filthy plate that mob through the outer quadrangles. They are just foes and dangers. He knows how to face foes and dangers. He doesn't know how to face unprocessed fear. and now that settles upon him. He hears men calling for instruction, fear staining their voices too. He forces his mind to focus. He studies the data flow of his retinal display. His auto-senses are screening out the harsh stimuli of explosions and flashfire. What his visor's sensoria render is a patchwork of heatus colour, laced by the geometric graphics of structures and architectural solids. On that float icons, the tag markers broadcast by each legionary's helmet system to afford instant overview and identification, even during the sensory overload of extreme combat. Each marker is a small fist icon and a name. To his left, Culloden, Lignis, and Bedwyr. Then Dvalin and the assault squad teams. To his right, the icon cluster of Leod Baldwin's fire team. Across the quad, the jumbled light dots of Tarkos's squads, holding semi-cover around the buttresses of the scholar's house. Between them, icons that have gone still and dropped to a pale half-tone, the markers of the fallen, their systems still transmitting at low power so that bodies can be found and recovered. So many. Too many. The Sons of Horus spill into the quads. To one side, armor supports them, tread weapons and sooty war machines that erupt through walls and subgates, scattering masonry and crushing barricades. They clatter up new hills of broken stone and fire their turret weapons, loosing concussive hell into Rand's positions. The side wall of the Archivum collapses like a released curtain and buries three squads in an avalanche of bricks. Rand expected the traitors to have long since turned off their tag markers, but they have not, and his system still reads them. Wolf's Head icons, the old mark of the 16th. But the names appending those icons have become illegible. They are incomprehensible non-names, as though the generating algorithm has corrupted or is simply unable to form letters and characters graphically. Wolf's Head icons and broken hell names. So many. Too many. Ran yells into his squad to squad and concentrates fire on the largest of the breach points. His fire teams open up, and so do those of Sergeant Tarkos and, to the left, across the range of quadrangles, Fisk Halen. Mass reactive shells from Astartes bolt guns and heavier support weapons bracket the breach point. Visibility drops instantly as the area torches with thousands of explosive detonations and vomiting clouds of dust. Half-seen traitors quake, twist, and topple. Some icons go to pale halftone, but it seems so few. Something is leading the Sons of Horus in. It is a cloven-footed horror, the size of a night engine. Its wings are vast, but still don't seem big enough to lift its mass off the broken ground. The flex and flap of them, which Ran can hear, like the sound of soaring rope, seems more intended to fan the flames and drive the wall of smoke towards them. The thing is hunched and horned. Its eyes are orange gashes of neon. Ran does not want to look at those eyes. He doesn't want to acknowledge that the thing, somehow, is still wearing the distorted pauldrons of 16th Legion cataphracty plate. It has a tag marker. The icon is a mere blister of contaminated pixels to his auto-senses. Ran reloads. He orders a sustained concentration of fire. He ignores the thump and thwack of impacts as men drop all around him. A hail of fire, a stupendous hail of fire, crosses the area from his right. For a few seconds it becomes a torrential deluge. Ran sees dark, misshapen figures writhe and fall. A counterstrike comes in, crossing the head of the Maxis processional like a steady flow of magma, burning everything in its path. Figures in yellow, shields locked, driving in across Ran's flank. Ran sees the raised standard a second before the data of his retinal display updates with marker codes. Archimus, master of the Huskarls, second of that name. Archimus. For the last months, Archimus has served in the Grand Borealis, Dawn's proxy in the Command Bastion. But Bab has fallen. And Archemus, perhaps impatient after so many hours at a strategium, fighting the war with his mind rather than his fists, has not fallen back into the locked sanctum to continue his duty. He is taken to the field instead. Perhaps he couldn't retreat. Perhaps the great gate was already shut. Perhaps joining the fight was his only option. Perhaps the sight of him here is a true signifier of defeat and desperation. There is nothing left to control or command, no orders left worth giving, and no strategy to oversee. Perhaps fighting is the only option remaining. But the sight of him here, a wonder. 600 imperial fists, many of them Huskarl veterans, advancing in perfect antecesum pergatus and driving unbelievable fury into the enemy's ribs. The traitors came in like a flash flood, a dirty torrent. Archemus's formation is much slower, the crawl of molten rock. But water splashes and dissipates. Lava is thick, steady, and inexorable, and water turns to steam where it touches.
"He is with us!" Ran roars. "He stands with us!"
His men roar in response and find some new stocks of courage. Halen's battle squads actually manage to edge forward 6 or 7 meters and engage close, swinging chain blades or firing point blank. A portion of the enemy tide, stung by Halen's jab and blocked by the Hall of Governance, turns too wildly and meets the rolling shield wall of Archemus's advance. A second axe blow falls across the throat of the traitor column. From the east, bisecting the Avenue of Justice, comes a line of Blood Angels Kratos tanks and Falchion superheavies, with Sycorans and Basilisk tractors in flank formation. The hammer of their rolling bombardment turns the top of Maxis into a forest of flame trees. Enemy machines turning to train on Archemus are gutted by penetrator shells and bulk beam weapons. Ran sees a traitor Arquitor hurled into the air, spinning, track links whipping like a broken belt. The Blood Angels advance through the rows of their armor, moving with fluid surgical speed that counterpoints Archemus's steady, relentless roll. Icon markers light up. There the squad groups of Satel Amory, of Zealous Varans, of Zephon Sorrowbringer. Amory's assault teams burn forward on their jump packs, led into the air by the rare wonder of Ascalon, commander of the glorious Sanguinary Guard, whose augmetic wings cast him in the image of his glorious Primarch. Airborne Astartes, angels of death, moving like missiles at low level, spear fire and bolter shells into the enemy, breaking beneath them.
"One push to snap their neck!"
Archemus roars over the vox. The master of Huskarl's observation is true. Despite their vast numbers, the head of the enemy mass is boxed in and blocked on three sides. At once, both Halen and Amory demand the honor. Both are well-placed, their units in striking distance, but Ran is reading the field. Either strike will be anticipated, and either one could end in an overreach. In the space of 3 minutes, Fafnir Ran has subconsciously rewritten the tactical rulebook in his head. Preparation and tested moves are all redundant, the honored codes of formation warfare hopelessly inadequate. The enemy thrives on the unexpected. The Imperial fists must learn the knack of it.
"Mine!" Ran voxes.
"My lord Seneschal?"
He hears the master of Huskarls respond, trying to isolate Ran's voice from the intersignal mayhem.
"Hold them hard," says Ran. "I have it."
"Yours indeed, Fafnir."
Ran orders melters and flamers to the fore. He gives the command even as his men are assembling. Of all the battlegroups in this crossroads of armies, his is the smallest, the weakest, and the most poorly positioned, the least likely to move or attempt a surge. That's precisely why Ran calls it. And precisely why Archemus, after months of studying the evolving madness of battle on his strategium, approves it without hesitation. Ran technically outranks him, but field authority always falls to the commander with the superior position, a fundamental code of Imperial Fists warfare. Archemus defers. He tightens his line and communicates holding restraint to Halen and Amory. Ran and his men are already moving, charging across the rubble from the dead end that should have been their unmarked graves. They come at the header formations of the Sons of Horus from the least expected direction. And they burn them. Howling flamers and squealing melters cut their path for them. Roasting armored figures topple before them, incandescent, shrieking and thrashing. Impact follows a few seconds later, the winding hammer blow contact of Astartes clashing with Astartes in close combat, swinging mauls and chainswords, driving with broken storm shields. Ran's axes, headsman and hunter bite deep. He guts one traitor's son and keeps running as the brute spins away, then sweeps the axe in his left hand through a spine with crunching force. Slivers of plasteel fly. He keeps moving, splitting a blackened visor in two. To his right and left, the new bloods of his squads keep pace, crashing from one foe to the next, wheeling chainswords and hammers. Blow by blow, they break the yard open, all the way to the Logist Gateway, then clear the line across Clanium Square. The enemy, its numbers vastly superior, is caught in a bottleneck and by surprise. The mass of them flinches back, stung, and then shatters across its right-hand edge as the Blood Angel's armor lights off and rains shells into their confused and tight-packed mass. The tide falls back. Lupercal's bastard sons retreat. The cloven-hoofed thing leading them is already vanishing into the smoke. It's a brief respite. Ran knows that. The enemy will gather and resurge in minutes. But they've held the line at Logis against a foe that, until now, had not been even slightly checked. Ran halts the charge at the edge of Clanium Square. Pushing further, though his blood wants him to, will simply force the kind of overreach he feared for Halen and the Blood Angels. Aemery's guards fly in to land around him, finishing the half-dead enemy with execution shots from bolt pistols or the clinical downstrikes of blades. Arcamus, resuming area control, orders rapid repositioning to defend the retaken ground before the assault resumes. There will be no time to rest. Battle will blur into battle.
"My hand, brother,"
says Ascalon, coming to Ran across the rubble and the burning dead, his augmetic wings retracting and folding high like a white banner against his back. They clasp. Ascalon, herald of the Sanguinary Guard. He seems like a winged god in gold. Ran feels mortal before him.
"Ingenious,"
the huge first Sanguinary says.
"Improvised," says Ran.
"Indeed, my lord," says Ascalon.
"The spirit moved me," says Ran.
"But of course."
"You've heard, then?"
"Heard what?" asked Ran.
Ascalon looks at him.
"That he rises,"
he says.
"That he stands with us."
Ran is silent for a second.
Is this true?"
"Word is spreading.
He rises, brother. He rises from the throne to stand with us. This is the hour."